Continuing in our series about poorly defined terms. I was speaking with a colleague in Philadelphia this summer. It's a good month for sermon development, apparently, July. And he was talking about how, as a rabbi, you're always responsible. And we tried to describe, it's clear when you say it, but it's hard to put into words, the difference between being responsible and being blamed. You know, it's not to say that it's always your fault, but ultimately you have to sort out, when you're in a leadership position of any kind, the responsibility. I think the best term for that is creating accountability. And again, accountability, I really think, is a slippery term. We talk about it. But it doesn't necessarily mean to say someone's accountable for something that if it fails, they'll be fired, so to speak. It means something subtly different, but again, hard to grasp. So we'll talk a little and try to sort out what it might mean and why I think, as you'll see, it's pretty important to have accountability in one's life and in institutions. These holidays are difficult for many. This sort of idea of God, the old man with the white beard on a throne, judging us, setting us in the book of life, or preparing us for death, whether it's for punishment or reward. It seems to be a hard theology for some people, maybe not for all of us, but for many. And a piece of this theology is lifted up in Pirkei Avot, right in the middle of the book. Akavya ben Mahalalel says that you know in life, you must know before whom you will give your judgment and accounting. That there comes a time, I remember there was a movie years ago with Albert Brooks called Defending Your Life. I don't remember it being a great movie, but I thought it had a very good image that was very Jewish, of sort of reviewing one's life on a screen, looking at the images. Reb Mimi, one of my teachers at school, at seminary, had the idea that there would be two screens, one your ideal life, and two the life you lived, and the hope was that they would line up somehow, that it'd be congruent. And we have a lot of wonderful traditions about what happens to us in the next world. What this judgment, what this accounting, this din v'cheshbon, is the Hebrew term, will look like. In the Talmud, Rava says that when a person is brought to judgment after death, you're asked, have you dealt honestly? Have you made regular time to study? Did you have a family life? Did you hope for redemption? Did you search after wisdom? Have you cultivated a discerning mind? And after all these, if the fear of God is your treasure, then what you've done in your life counts. Your Torah, your study, your wisdom counts. And if not, it doesn't count. These many questions one could pose now and think about and reflect during these 10 days and beyond. Have you dealt honestly, made time for study, had family life, sought redemption, sought wisdom, sought discernment, and lived with awe? Those are the questions that will be posed to us, and those are the questions, no doubt, that we could pose to ourselves at any moment. It's a great piece of wisdom to think about the structures through which one could evaluate one's life, and there are many. I think the essential is to create rubrics. About 2 years ago, Ken and others introduced sort of assessment for myself, for the rabbi every year. And having 9 rubrics, whatever they were, helps clarify what I should be doing with my time. All the more so in a personal life. That setting up goals, setting up expectations is important. And to do that, we have to turn our gaze inwardly. We have to think about who we are and what we value. There's another comment in Brachot in the Talmud that says, by Rava, and Rav Chista may have said it, that if you see yourself suffering, you should inquire about your deeds. Which, in the context of the Talmud, is a tough thing to say to people. I mean, it's what Job says, is Job's friends say to him, you must have done something. But I think what it could be saying in Talmud is not, look at yourself because you screwed up. Again, not blame, but responsibility. Instead, it could be saying, use this opportunity to think about yourself, to reflect on your life. That, as I've noticed in my life and the life of many of you, suffering is wasted if we don't use it as a chance to grow. If we suffer and just bear through and try not to quit, but don't see anything new about ourselves, that's a disappointing way to deal with grief and loss and pain. Turn your gaze inward at times. Yifashvesh b'ma'asav. Look to what you're doing. Think about yourself. Not in a narcissistic way, but with a clear and reflective gaze. Shakespeare in Coriolanus, one of my favorite plays, has two gentlemen talking to each other, and one says, oh, that you could turn your eyes towards the napes of your necks and make an interior survey of your good selves. That's what accounting is. Accountability is not punishment, it's not blaming, it's not fault-finding, it's getting a clear picture. I think that one of the metaphors, one of the messages of this holiday season is not that God will find fault in us, and it's not that we have to whip ourselves, and this, you know, I said a couple years ago, don't hit too hard. That's not the point. The point is not to beat yourself up or to think that God or your parents or your friends are beating you up, but to look clearly, because there's a reason for that. There's a value to that. In the synagogue, we're doing a lot of accountability, so to speak. So Marty and a few other people are looking over our membership rolls. Ken and Jeff are looking over our bank statements. A few other, like I said, assessment of my work. We don't do it to point fingers. We're not doing it to say, oh, this person screwed up last year, or this needs to be better. But you can't even evaluate what you're doing without having the right numbers and the right data and details and knowing what's there in yourself, in your institution, in your home, in your bank account. You can't plan for your retirement unless you know your statements. That's a kind of accounting. I don't know who's watching Game of Thrones, but a Lannister always pays his debts. You know, that's the motto of one of the royal houses. That you're accountable for what you do, where you succeed, where you fail. And you don't take that knowledge home and beat yourself up. And I don't think we're doing that in sort of our board assessment processes. The point isn't to say, oh, we're so good, or we're so bad, or we're failing, or we're succeeding, but to have a clear view so that we can point a way forward. You can't move forward unless you know where you are. You have a good sense of it. And God knows that too. God has a very fair view of who we are. God is very clear on us. Now, there are people in life that think they can hide. There are people in life who think they put on a good face in public, but you know, no one knows how angry or irritable I can get at home. But no one hides that well. If you look at all carefully, you see the whole person. And God's like that. We're told at this season that God counts us. And we're told in various points in Torah that there are censuses. Censes?
Maybe us, because in Greek, us is also plural.
Good. Censusize. Sensatia. So one of the metaphors that our sages offer about the censuses is it's like a shepherd whom the owner entrusted with a flock. This is a great old metaphor. The shepherd, that the rabbi or God or Jesus used this term, the shepherd is accountable, but not always to blame. We don't have the understanding that the shepherd could have prevented every fox and wolf, that the shepherd could come back with a perfect count, but the shepherd at the end of the day has to make the count. These censuses in Bible are like the case of a shepherd whom an owner entrusted his flock. When the shepherd came to the end of the time, the day, the week, on returning them, he numbered them, just to know, just to know. You can't own yourself. You can't own your problems, your deficits, your successes, unless you can see them, unless you can account for them. And by going through that process, there's a level of ownership and uplift. One of the ways in which land is acquired, says the Midrashim, is by walking the field along its borders. And you acquire that land as far as you walk, which kind of became a Zionist proposition too. You step through things. You see clearly, you survey, you do the surveying work. That's a kind of accountability. Now, those surveyors with their sticks and their angles don't own the land. They don't point out its faults. They just tell you where it is. That's what life requires. You can save the resentments and the repercussions for later. And then there's this beautiful level in our tradition of things that are beyond counting. One of my favorite short stories, I think one of the great short stories of all time, is called The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. It's a 15-page short story about Vietnam. And it uses the accounting of all the things these grunts carried, how much each weighed, where they would store it, where they got it from, to tell their stories. It sounds like a pretense, but it works very well in the context of the story. And those, he talks about tangible weights and intangible weights. And even when you look at, you know, I got an A in science, but a C in math, there's less tangible things you have to know about yourself. There's this whole chapter of the Talmud, or a whole section, I should say, of the Talmud, about things to which we are accountable to God, if not to other humans. And that, you know this classic story about Yom Kippur, that Yom Kippur is between us and God, but between us and fellow human being, we have to settle that on our own. But there's a contrary-wise principle, that there are things we have to deal with in the physical world, and then things only God knows about. And those are the pieces that are harder to lift. There's a great article in the New Yorker about a week or two ago talking about the psychology and the trauma of people who have committed accidental manslaughter, typically hitting someone with your car, not even driving drunk, but just missing a turn, and how there's no real DSM category for that. There's no real support group for that, typically. But it's shockingly common. I think, in fact, Sam Walton, one of the Walmart heiresses, did it, and she speaks of how it affected her whole life. There are things, says one of the scientists in the article, that people who are not culpable can nevertheless be responsible. There's no crime. There's no bad. There's no blame. There's no acquittal. There's no exoneration. There's no punishment. There's no guilt. But you know. And God forbid that any of you should have the experience of accidentally harming someone. As I told last time this year about the woman who drove into me while I was on my bike, she wasn't a bad person. But God forbid anything more serious had happened, she would carry that her whole life. We know those wounds, the scars that you don't see, the scars that you forget about, the weights that you carry that don't exactly have names, and the weights that we as a society carry, the weights that we lift up, the things that we have to notate and account for. Heschel, in his writings about the prophets, one of his first works, says that the prophets remind us of the moral state of the people. Few are guilty, but all are responsible. You may not be culpable, you may not be guilty, but you hold on to it. And to refresh, not to bury yourself in blame or shame or guilt, but to know. You can't move forward until you know. You can't make change in your life if you don't see the whole picture. If you have blind spots that you haven't accounted for, that you haven't measured out and sorted through, they're going to hold you back. You're going to move forward with a level of maturity and growth and happiness, and once a week, once in a while, you're going to snap because you haven't accounted for a small corner that you've let remain dark. Bill Murray, perhaps my all-time favorite movie comedian. A friend of mine got to babysit for him, which I would have done for free, but apparently Bill Murray pays $40 an hour also. So, yeah, pretty good deal. And he likes to drop in on people's parties. You know, there's always great sort of urban myths about Bill Murray, which make me like him, of course, more. But one thing he said recently that I was very disappointed to hear, he says, I don't look too hard into myself because I'm afraid of what I would see. And I thought, it's kind of a waste of a life. You know, if you don't know yourself by the end of your life, or at least try to, what are you doing with this time? What does this all mean? Because I think one of the points I want to get across to you is you can't hide. Your friends can see you. Your loved ones see you. Your teachers see you. God sees you. And they're not angry. They're not blaming. A decent person doesn't. Accountable doesn't mean that you have to be at 100% in everything you do. But the worst kind of thing, and you know this, you've met these people. If you haven't, you might be one of those people. Who think they're A, who think they're B, who think they're C, but aren't seeing themselves clearly. I mean, that's the most frustrating human experience when someone thinks, I'm not arrogant, and you think, oh my God, you're the most arrogant person I've ever met. Or, I don't get angry easily, and you think, you're the most angry person I've ever talked to. You know, that's what's really the worst. And I've had people say, you know, I'm really high maintenance. And I think, yeah, because at least you know I'm really high maintenance. I could say that about myself. At least you know it. You know, there's a certain delight when a person's aware of their shortfalls, their shortcomings, and owns it. Because the truth is, it's not going anywhere. And no one missed it. And if you're really that delusional about who you are, get with the program. Because what ultimately happens, if we go back to that judgment, you know, that beautiful sense of, have you dealt honestly? Have you had a regular time for study? Did you have family life? Seek redemption and wisdom and discernment and fear of God, awe. Eventually, metaphorically or literally, metaphysically or actually or ontologically, I don't know, Talmud says, the Midrash says, that when you die from this world, and this is why I think judging your life, what was this movie called I just mentioned? Defending your life. That's much more catchy that way. I think this is the image that someone went for in that picture. When you die from this world, all your particular actions pass before you, like homunculi, like embodiments, like personifications of an event in your life. And they say, such and such you did on this day, and so you did on this day. Do you agree? Do you confirm that we have the record straight? And the deal is that they'll sort it out with you. You know, I guess there's some room for negotiation. But you'll say yes. And then you sign the ledger. And you write, yes, I have been judged well. I mean, what a relief it will be to be seen in all of our warts and flaws and joys and goodnesses and strengths. And in the meantime, we're in the 10 days of repentance. From now to then, you know, you should live a long and healthy life, one full of meaning and accountability and self-awareness. But at this moment in our tradition, at this week and a half, one of the goals is to grow, to fix, to mature, to take hard and long looks at ourselves. And ultimately, I want to navigate the difference between being responsible and accountable and being blameful and shameful. Let's test this out. Maimonides tells us that at every time throughout the year, and certainly at this time, you should view yourself as finely balanced between transgression and positive attributes, between good and bad, between pluses and minuses, pro and con. And likewise, the whole world. half meritorious and half obligated in sin. And he notes further that every time you tip the balance, not only are you tipping the balance for yourself, but because the world is so finely divided, you're tipping the balance for the whole world. And that's the goal of accountability, is to just move things from one column to the other eventually, to move them from liability to asset. And it doesn't even have to be as daunting as Maimonides often makes things out to be. One of my rabbis, Mark Borovitz, in Los Angeles at the rehab where I worked, suggests it this way. Take Maimonides' idea, but simplify. Imagine that you are just 51% evil and 49% good, which in most people's self-conception, it's a lot worse than that. But give yourself a 49-51 split. And then Rabbi Borovitz says, all you really need to do is a 2% improvement. Anyone can do a 2% improvement. That's a cost of living increase. Can you find 2% more time to devote to family, to community, to the world? Could you give 2% more to charity, become 2% kinder, more considerate, 2% growth in wisdom? That's all this holiday this year asks. That you look at yourself, you acknowledge who you really are, you see yourself for what you are, good and bad and in between, and you try to shift just a little each year. It's just marginal change. As I said, my motto is, what's the least change you can make for the greatest impact? Just 2%. Find the 2% this week and this year that will make your life the most better.